This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. If you need any more information, head to FUBARradio.com.
Nick Helm and Nathaniel Metcalf's Fan Club on FUBAR Radio.
Hello! This is Nick and Nat's Fan Club.
Hello.
My name's Nick Helm and this is...
Nathaniel Metcalf.
And this is...
Fan Club.
First rule of Fan Club is...
Tell all your friends about Fan Club.
Tell your friends about Fan Club.
And what's the second
rule? Please, for the love of God, tell your friends about Fan Club. I didn't tweet about the show today, so I can't even tell you... If we've even had three
Let's
retweets.
See, hang on, I can't find out.
But I was just saying that I tweeted a joke in the week that was saying, oh, when you, it was like one of those things where I was like, I had a photo of me smacking myself in the head, and then it was, oh, when you watch the ads on something that you've taped. And I thought, oh, that's all right. It's done surprisingly well for someone that hates Twitter, but it's done surprisingly well. But what I have is several people have been in contact quite angrily to say, oh, taped, what are you, a caveman that's been frozen in time? And you go, you still don't have to say the word taped.
Yeah, so it's one of those words, that's what it means now. It just means
I taped
recorded.
But it doesn't mean that you use an actual tape.
No. But people would say taped. I think we're cooler for saying taped.
I think taped is sort of retro.
Yeah, it's like retro.
It's
and
analog.
Analog, that's what.
I think it's absolutely fine to say taped.
I think I'm probably more analog than I am digital anyway.
Yeah, me too. Like Bruce Willis in Die Hard 4. So if it was you, stop being so bloody anal. And so what have you
put
been?
Put tape over your mouth.
Or
a recording over your...
What Nat said.
Yeah.
That's Fan Club. So what have you been a fan of this week, Nat?
Well, I went with you, Nick, on Monday to see Bill Murray at the Royal Festival Hall.
Yeah, we went to see Bill Murray at the Royal Festival Hall. Well, it's interesting because Hayley last week was talking about going to see Woody Allen in concert. And I was talking about Steve Martin. We're talking about how Woody Allen didn't really address...
When they're doing concerts of things that they're not really known for, isn't it? So like comedians doing music, essentially.
Yeah, and so Steve Martin played the banjo, and I went to see that, and he did some jokes. Woody Allen plays the clarinet. He didn't do any jokes. And see Bill Murray do readings from Mark Twain, accompanied by a cellist and Jan Volger.
Jan Volger, who's a very... I'm not familiar with Jan Volger, but that's my fault. That's my fault. Apparently, he's world famous
in the cello world. Bill Murray bumped into him on an international flight, and
he's doing well.
And got to know him there, and then he ended up doing a bloody show at the Royal Festival Hall.
And what did you think of it? I actually, it's really nice to see Bill Murray for one.
Yeah, but that does wear off fast, doesn't it?
It does. It does. Once you've seen him.
And then you're just sort of... I thought that it could have done a little bit more structure, but it was fine.
Yes, yeah, exactly. And I think he's got a lovely voice, Bill Murray.
Yeah,
I think he's got a lovely
voice.
Tone to his voice, which I think worked with that kind of classical concert thing, because his voice is very... It's like an instrument. He uses it like an instrument.
Sure. Well, interestingly, I was watching The Raven starring John Cusack this week.
Oh, yeah.
And it did dawn on me that John Cusack has a very similar voice to Bill Murray.
Oh, yeah?
It was the same voice. I had my eyes closed for a lot of The Raven. It's a great movie, but it works on an audio level. That's good. And the other thing I watched this week was Ghostbusters 2.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Starring Bill Murray.
And that's Fan Club.
It all connects. I went to see Bill... I think Ghostbusters 2 was the first film that I went to see at the cinema that I didn't need to piss during.
Oh, wow.
So I must have been... I think I was 7 or 8, and I was really proud of myself because I managed the whole... 1 hour, 45 minutes, and not needing a wee. So, that's not true, actually. I do actually remember that I did need a wee during it now.
What a great story.
There I was, all boastful, and I've just realised that that's incorrect, because I remember, because when I came out of the toilets, Vigo's head was floating over a river of slime, and I was terrified. I was a sensitive child. But what I did notice about Ghostbusters 2, which I haven't noticed before, is how little the gang are all together on screen.
Right.
And I obviously Ghostbusters 2 had very... I think the reason why Ghostbusters works, one of the reasons why Ghostbusters works, and it's the same reason why Anchorman works, and the same reason why Ghostbusters 2 and Anchorman 2 don't work, is the fact that with Ghostbusters, I think they had sort of like, they had too much to film.
Right.
Right. So they ended up with, they had these huge scripts, and then you have these, so what happens is lots of the sequences from Ghostbusters either got cut out or they got compounded into sort of like a montage sequence. So the whole bit with Dan Aykroyd wearing kind of like an admiral's uniform and getting a blowjob off a ghost.
Exactly.
That was a whole sequence where they go to a haunted castle, but they didn't use it and they just used that one clip. And then when you see them running about New York and doing and having all the newspapers flying out, they were all like sequences, and then they got compounded down into to montages. But when you get to Ghostbusters 2, because they were all so busy, they basically filmed what they had. And yeah. The first one was sort of made in the edit.
Everything they filmed is in Ghostbusters 2.
I think that's the same problem with Anchorman 2, where they had so much leftover material with Anchorman that they made another film out of it.
Like an Anchorman redux.
Yeah, and with Anchorman 2, it's like they're so busy. They're all like superstars now. That they filmed what they had, and then the film is just basically, we haven't got anything else, this is it. And if it didn't work, they didn't have any options in the edit. That's what I think.
Controversially, I don't know that... Now, I watched Ghostbusters again last year or something. I don't like it as much as I did when I was a kid. I think it really suffers for that.
I don't think you can... I think... I still like Ghostbusters. I still really like Ghostbusters. It's not my favourite. If I had to pick a Bill Murray, it would be Groundhog Day, which think is a perfect film.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's very few perfect films, but I think Groundhog Day is one of them.
I think that's true. I think there are fair... What would you say? Perfect films, I'd say Back to the Future, I think is a perfect film. Jaws, I think, is a perfect film. I can't think of many others.
Goodfellas, I would say.
Oh, yeah.
There are others, but maybe this is the thing that we can do for the... Natalie is saying something through the thing. Have you typed something? No, you haven't. Okay. It's distracting. I thought you had a perfect film.
Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
Priscilla, Queen of the Desert is a perfect... Do you know what? I haven't seen it. Oh, we went to see the musical with Jason Donovan in it.
Oh, yeah.
I got the worst seats. Did you guess who I was sitting next to?
Who are you sitting next to, Nick?
When I went to see Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, the person I was sitting next to was the spotlight operator. It was like the worst seats. I don't think Grace Point Blank is a perfect film, Natalie.
I think Lee's a good film. Yeah, I think Lee's a good film. I'll tell you who's in Gross Point Blank, though. Dan Aykroyd. That's Fan Club.
with Ghostbusters, you kind of like, they were all at the beginning of their career, and it was kind of like a big thing. And it was originally for John Belushi, and Bill Murray came along and he kind of like filled in and all of that. So, yeah, great. Ghostbusters 2 is like, you can see how much tension there is on the set, where all of Bill Murray's scenes, there's a few scenes where he's with Dan Aykroyd and Harold Ramis, mm-hmm. but basically most of the scene, Ernie Hudson, barely in it.
Yeah, yeah.
Again, which you'd think they'd have corrected by that point.
Yeah, of course.
And so, obviously, there's a lot of fans that don't particularly like Ghostbusters 2 because it's just a rehash of the first one, etc. But I think one of the main problems is that Bill Murray clearly, he puts in a really obnoxious performance where he's actually quite unlikable, like the opposite of how likable he was in the first film. And then also, all of his scenes are either with a baby or with Sigourney Weaver or just him on his own. Right, and then you'll have a scene where Dan Aykroyd and Harold Ramis are sort of like explaining something scientific to him, and he'll be taking the piss out of them to their faces,
right,
in character. But there's sort of like this uneasy look in Dan Aykroyd's eyes, like he's not enjoying himself.
And it probably wasn't a happy thing to film.
I think it was a very miserable experience. Like, Bill Murray turned up on set, he signed up for it, and he turned up on set, and then he found out that basically they'd rewritten the script, and this wasn't the script he'd signed on for, so he's furious. But there's whole scenes where you've got the three of them, you've got Ernie Hudson, Harold Ramis, and Dan Aykroyd, and they run in and they go, hey, Peter, we need your help. And Bill Murray... he just turns around and says, I'm going to have dinner with Sigourney Weaver. And then the next scene is they're absolutely covered in shit. There's slime all over them and all that. And they're coming out of like a drain. And Bill Murray's just, he's not even wearing the outfit anymore. He's just wearing kind of like a trench coat. And he's just like, he literally turned up for work.
He's not in the film.
He's not in the film. And it's a different character. Anyway, that's what I noticed. Well, I hadn't noticed, but I knew there was always something wrong with Ghostbusters 2, but I couldn't quite put my finger on it. And it's the fact that there's no chemistry between the main lot and Bill Murray basically didn't want to do it.
I was at the time of Ghostbusters 2, a fan of the real Ghostbusters cartoon series. And I remember, like, when Ghostbusters 2 was on, I felt that that was canon, the continuity in that. So when it's like, but you have been Ghostbusters all this time.
Yeah.
That's why I found it really confusing that at the start of Ghostbusters 2, they've all kind of disbanded and gone their own way.
I will tell a lie about Ghostbusters 2. There was a whole sequence that they filmed that they cut out, which was Rick Moranis didn't want to come back unless he had a bigger part. So they wrote an entire subplot with about him and his cousin, who was played by Eugene Levy. And they filmed this whole half the film with Eugene Levy in it. And they just, I think they always knew they were going to cut it. And then that's why you've got Rick Moranis kind of like walking into a room and going, oh, Slimer! No, that was my impression. It's 10 past. We've talked for 10 minutes.
About Ghostbusters 2 and Bill Murray.
That's
fun. Fan Club.
Can play a song now.
We've got a special guest coming up after the song as well.
Got a special guest coming up after the song. We've got the one, the only, Brett Goldstein. And, I mean, that's how he actually has to be introduced. And, we've got a song for a very special birthday girl. She's 30 today, and I cannot find the fucking... Oh, I've got to use my hand. here we go. And a player. Come on. Part one. What are you saying? Part one? Why are you shouting at me?
Just taking over me. Stuff inside crazy. Tonight, I'll be your naughty girl. I'm calling all the girls. I see you looking up and down.
Nat's Fan Club on Foo Bar Radio.
And we're back! Just like to apologise, I wasn't slagging off John Cusack before the song. I was basically just saying that I didn't think that Gross Point Blank was a perfect film from beginning to end. Don't worry, it's a very good film, but it's just lacking some... Oh, God, I couldn't get through the sentence. Welcome back to Nick...
And that's Fan Club. Yes.
We are joined in the studio now by... Professional comedian Brett Goldstein. how are you doing, Brett?
I'm very grateful to be here with you two.
Ah,
good. What are you working on at the moment? Are you doing Edinburgh?
I'm doing a new Edinburgh show, yes.
Yeah? And have you got any shows coming up in London?
I'm doing one at the Aces of Eights.
Aces and Eights.
I can't remember
Tufnell
the date.
Park.
Yeah. Oh, and
keep updating that website to find out to find out when Brett's on at Aces.
June the 19th.
Yeah. I bet it's on their website though if you wanted to go.
If you looked up Aces and Eights, me and Jen Brister, who, you know, if you hate my show, you got Jen Brister. So.
I love Jen Brister.
Exactly. We're not going to hate your show, Brett.
Oh, bless you.
Not going to hate your show. I've literally sat and watched everything you've done.
I love all your shows, Brett. I really do. I think they're incredible. This is the first time you've done Edinburgh in 3 years.
Yeah.
Is it? Yeah. Did you do last year?
No, I was meant to do last year and then I had to cancel.
Why did you cancel?
Because of a job.
What job?
Because I did a... Do you know why it was really awful? And I guess I'm allowed to talk about it. Because I did a pilot in America and you have to, like, sign a thing saying you're available for 7 years.
Yeah. Until, of course you did.
Until you find out if it's been picked up or not. And so, legally, I was not allowed to have Edinburgh booked in. Right. And then in, like, July 31st, they said, oh, but the series isn't going forward. And you were like, oh, thanks. So, my August is free.
What's that like, then?
What?
Being in a big American show.
America.
It's big. What's it like being a pilot?
Yeah.
Well, the process of getting a part in a pilot is one of the most stressful, insane experiences. I'll give you a short version, but basically, when I did two pilots, I did an HBO one 4 years ago, 3 years ago, and 2 years ago, I don't know, who cares? And I had to audition 12 times for it, but the first audition was just with like a casting director. Then you're asked to come back the next day with like the director. Then you're asked to come back the next day, director, writer. You're asked to come back the next day with executives until eventually you're doing an audition in a room that is basically a small theatre with like 50 people in it, all the execs from HBO and the president. And every time I was like, do you want something different? Because they're also filming it every time.
Yeah,
you go,
sure.
You've got the... That's what it's going to look like on camera. Yeah,
but it doesn't feel like you're doing a play or something.
I was like, do you want me to do it bigger? And they were like, no, exactly how you're doing it. And in the end, and then on the final day where you have your screen test, which is the last one, when you've got through to the final round, you get locked in. You arrive at HBO. No one's friendly. No one goes, like, hi, yeah, welcome. Everyone's like, come up here. You get locked in a room. There are three other actors. You're down to three. Everyone's like sequestered in different like prison cells. You left alone there, no one tells you what's going on. Then a lawyer comes in with like 20 pages of contracts and says, sign this. And you're basically signing the next 7 years of your life to this show.
Yeah.
And you're not allowed to do anything else. And you're like, and there's just a lawyer going, sign this. And you go, okay.
And are you in the room with the other possible three people?
No, they're in separate prisons. But then eventually...
So it's like you're criminals and they're trying to get your version of the story.
Yeah, and then eventually you're brought out and then you are with the two others and you're like just literally stood in a like queue and they mic you up and you're at the door of the like performance area and then someone comes and gets the person. I was like last of the three. They go in. And then you don't know what's happened to them. And then they come out looking haunted and they go, cheers, guys, good luck. And then they go. And then the next one, you just have to stand in this corridor. And then eventually I went in and it's like the president of HBO, all the execs. And it was a comedy.
But what do you do when you go through the door?
So I went in and I went, and I was like, I don't know if you say hello. I don't know what the rule is.
Yeah.
And I came in and I went, hi, everyone. And no one said anything. Everyone just stared, folded arms at me. And I thought, oh, this is okay. And then you're doing like a comedy scene and you're doing it with the lead. I was with the lead actor.
But the mood is not light at all.
No one's laughing. I didn't hear any laughter all day.
Yeah.
it's like, oh, I'm doing a gig. It's like a corporate gig.
It's the
like,
worst possible experience to go through in comedy. Order to get something positive out of it.
And then I left. And then, thank God, the casting director was very kind to me, because you leave just thinking, I've no idea, because it was silent. And the casting director sort of took me aside and she went, that's the best you've ever done it. And I thought, it's exactly the same way I've done it every single time, but thank you.
Yeah.
And then I got in my car, and then 20 minutes later I got a text saying, you've got the part. And then it was like, yeah. And then I...
But then after that, there's still a lot of pressure, because you can kind of get fired at any moment.
Yeah, so
you?
Then you hear that people get fired. So we did you do a read-through. Oh, this is the worst. Do you want all this?
Yeah.
All right. That's boring, isn't it?
We've got 40 minutes to film.
Here's the worst story, but it was an all extension of this. We were told you've got a casual read-through before the main read-through. The main read-through is in front of all the execs and all the producers. And I was told, that one's pressure. But this one is just so the cast can all be together and hear the show read out loud together. So I turn up for the casual read-through. And the director very specifically says, this is just a casual read-through, no pressure, let's just try stuff. Have fun.
We're all having fun.
Sure.
Let's try some stuff, and if it doesn't work, we can refine it, and then when we do the real read-through, so we do the casual read-through, everyone's laughing, having fun, people are trying stuff.
Yeah.
And it finishes, oh, guys, that was amazing, thank you so much, we all file out, we'll see you in a few days. Lorraine, just a minute, please. As Lorraine's leaving, Lorraine, put it down.
She was killed.
Lorraine was not there at the real read-through.
Absolutely.
Wow,
horrific.
That is horrible.
It's different in England, isn't
it? In England you do one audition.
When we did Uncle,
yeah,
I read the script, and the character Casper was for this 20-year-old Justin Bieber kid. And I said, you should get Brett. And then I turn up on set and you're there. And it's just like, right. And you're completely wrong for the part as it was
written. Absolutely.
But you're great.
Well, thanks.
That's how you do it, isn't it?
So much easier in England.
So much easier.
No execs. One audition. In. I think it was a self-tape. Anyway.
My dad is really proud of how well my TV career is going. And I said, no, Dad, it's not my TV career. I've just been in a lot of pilots. So... that's Fan Club.
Nick Helm and Daniel Metcalf's Fan Club. On Foo Bar Radio.
So what are you a fan of this week, Brett? In life, actually.
Oh, in life.
You got a favourite TV show?
Oh, by the way, a film that I think is perfect.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think School of Rock is a perfect film. I think there is not a sausage wrong with it.
Yeah. That's a really great film, actually. I went with my dad to see that cinema, and that was one of the ones where you come out of it, and it's because me and my dad have a different kind of like perspective on films, and some things that I like, he'll hate, and some things that I mean, like we went to see Hook together in 1990, and my dad came out of it and said that was all right, and that was the moment I lost respect for him. I was just like, oh wow, even I knew as a 9-year-old that Hook was shit.
When I was 10, because of Batman came out and it was a 12 certificate, I got very excited about the idea I could get into 12 certificate films if I went with my dad, and so I went to see anything that was a 12 certificate. So we went to see My Left Foot when I was 10. A 10-year-old boy went to see My Left Foot. And the best thing about it was, when my dad went to see it, he doesn't really know about things, so he just went up to the box office and said, 2 left feet, please.
Do you love it? Do you remember liking it?
I remember quite liking it, yeah. I was that sort of kid, I think. I'm the kind of kid that would have enjoyed My Left Foot.
Yeah.
I still like quite grim films. As you know, I do.
You like Kez, don't
I
you?
I love Kez. Absolutely love it.
Kez. I've not seen Kez.
You've never seen it?
No, but I feel like I have. I watched you do an act out of the entirety of Kez or something, and you did all the impressions, and I feel like I've seen it.
Yeah, that's basically it.
In a way, yeah.
It's as good as that.
I feel like with your mental health, you shouldn't see Kez.
Sure.
If I may.
Sure, cool.
Yeah. As a guidance.
I wasn't
guidance.
Planning on talking about my mental health on Nick and Nat's Fan Club.
Seeing
as you brought it up, Brett, I do have days when I find it difficult to get out of Keep It Light. So
Brett, have you got a favourite TV show?
I have. Well, I've got many, but I was thinking, what am I like obsessive about? And I am obsessive about Twin Peaks.
I've been
like obsessive, and I read all the books, and I think about Twin Peaks every day.
Yeah.
And it makes me happy just to think about it.
Did you watch it when it was first aired?
Well, so I think Twin Peaks like is the reason I'm sort of fucked in the head, is because when I was 9 or something, and I was with my sister, and we'd come home from somewhere, and we ran in to say hello to my dad, and he was watching telly, and he went, "Shut up!" He went, "Shut up! Sit down!" And it was the very first episode of Twin Peaks, and he didn't want us disturbing him, so we didn't know what it was, and we sat down and watched the show, and we were like, "Oh my god!" And then the end of the first episode is the most terrifying thing of all time, and me and my sister then were scared forever, to the extent that I was supposed to move out of my sister's bedroom that day, I believe. Or it was like I'd had one day in my own room, and I was so scared, my sister was so scared, I dragged my mattress back into my sister's room and just slept by her bed, and it stayed like that until I was 18 years old.
I've never seen Twin Peaks.
You've never seen it?
It's David Lynch, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, and he did Dune.
Yes.
Mm. So I have a difficulty sitting through David Lynch stuff, and it's just because I'm not very mature, I think mentally mature. Or I haven't been. In my head, I've built it up as this terrifying, hardcore experience. Obviously, I know about Twin Peaks, know of Twin Peaks, but I've never actually... I've even got a DVD, Blu-ray box set or whatever it is, and it's not got the cellophane taken off it. You know what I mean? It's just kind of like, I know it's something I'm going to do at some point. And I had a meeting with a writer, and we were talking, and we were talking about Twin Peaks, and I said, "Oh, I've never seen it." And then he proceeded. And I've waited 20 years to see it. I will watch it. I'm definitely going to see it. Right, I'm going to watch the film, and I'm going to watch the new series. I'm going to do it all. Right? I am going to do it. And I told the writer, "Oh, I've not seen it yet. You know, I've been kind of waiting for that moment." And he said, "Right, yeah, well, this is the ending." And he just told me the ending. He didn't even say... He just told me the ending.
Why would he do that?
I don't know. And now I can't... If I watch it, I'm not going to commit. I'm not going to commit to, like, a 30-hour...
Do you know what? I think you can still watch it.
You can.
There's absolutely... It didn't even have an ending until 6 months ago.
Yeah, you can still watch it. It's a real sad.
I think I've got to drink enough so that my memory gets frazzled, that I will forget that we had that conversation.
But I also think you'll love it. I'm really surprised you haven't seen it.
I'm sort of I'm scared of it. I think that it's like one of the... It's like Mulholland Drive. It's like everyone goes, "Oh man, it's like, you know, watching a dream." I'm just, I don't want to do that. I want it to be really... I have difficulties with The Shining because it's ambiguous. So it's I don't want to watch something that's deliberately, constantly ambiguous. I just want people to say,
This is what it is.
This is what it is. Happy Gilmore wins the cup. Do you know what I mean? And I'm like, oh, yeah, good.
Oh, yeah. Okay, well, maybe you won't like it.
I'm definitely going to watch it. It's not like something I've written off. It's just I've been spending all my life gearing up to it.
I reckon if you watch the first episode and you didn't like it, it's probably fine not to watch the rest.
You can say a lot of that. You know, if you watch the first two series of Game of Thrones and you haven't managed to get through that, even though some of your friends are in it, then it's just kind of like, and you still can't get through it.
But I think Twin Peaks is better in that, you know how like most of like modern box sets, people go like, "You've got to watch 6 episodes. You've got to get 6 hours of life, and then you're into it.
If you watch series 1 and 2, they're quite bad. But then if you spend 30 hours
Danny
watching,
DeVito shows up, it's much more watchable.
If you give 3 days of your life to this thing you're not enjoying, eventually you'll enjoy it because it's like Stockholm Syndrome.
Yeah.
But Twin Peaks, give it one.
Yeah, give it
if
one.
If you don't like it at the end of the pilot...
I don't think you need to watch the rest.
Sure, okay.
Walk away.
Right, okay. I really like Kyle MacLachlan.
He's so great.
I'm basing that on the fact that I've seen Showgirls.
Yeah, I imagine him like...
And he's
where
amazing.
He's happier to be there.
Yeah. Okay, good. And why do you like Twin Peaks? Because it's scary.
Because it sort of has, I think, like genuinely done, I suppose, like a dream, whatever. It lives in my head, and I think about it a lot, and it's sort of, I think about it every day, and I have a new thought about it, like, oh, what about the thing? And it's sort of, and I think it gives you the thing that you don't like, which, to be fair, the thing that David Lynch does, I don't like anyone else doing it. It isn't like I like weird, arty shit normally.
Yeah, sure.
But David Lynch is so individual and unique that anyone trying to be David Lynch, I hate it. I'm like, oh, this is Lynch-esque, is usually shit.
Yes.
But pure Lynch, there's nothing like it. And it's like...
But it's also just spending a holiday in this guy's head, isn't it? And it's just that thing where it's like Americana, but in a very sort of pleasant... The other thing is, considering how dark and bleak some of the things that happen in Twin Peaks are, the town, it's still a place that you go, oh, I'd love to live there. Even though you know there are all sorts of like weird, terrible, horrific things happening, you'd still feel like, I want to spend some time there and hang out with all the people.
I mean, I really like Blue Velvet.
Yeah, you'll love
it. It's more
you're
than,
love
it's
it.
Like that, but
so
more.
It's like that.
The thing is also, why I really respect him, is you know we have this thing of nostalgia and everything comes back and everything comes back. And I think everything comes back and we're really excited, like Arrested Development. Oh, Arrested Development's coming back. We're all excited. And then it comes back and we go, oh, it wasn't quite as good as we were all hoping. And it's sort of, I think it's because everything comes back and they kind of give us what we want. Mm. And giving us what we want isn't actually that satisfying because in the beginning it was new to us. And what's so amazing about Twin Peaks The Return, which did 25 years later, I mean, I was very excited about it and very nervous about it, is like from episode one of it, it's like he's gone, oh, by the way, I'm not going to give you remotely what you want, you fucking dicks. Yeah. I'll do whatever the fuck I want and you will like it because that's what you liked in the first place, is you've never seen anything like this before.
Yeah,
exactly.
And I'm giving you something you've never seen before, even though
and yet
you
when,
think you want the same.
And you like that.
I love it.
And yet when
amazing.
Someone like Rian Johnson does that, it's just annoying. So,
but that is a similar thing, though. The Star Wars, The Force Awakens is someone making a Star Wars film as a response to the prequels that its audience didn't like. So what The Force Awakens is J.J. Abrams making a Star Wars film that he thinks Star Wars fans will like, because I'll just try and make it exactly like the three Star Wars films that people love.
Yeah.
Whereas the thing that's... Twin Peaks has this thing where it's David Lynch saying, oh, I've been away for... I haven't done this film in 20 years, but in those 20 years, I've been developing. I'm not the same David Lynch. I'm still working on things. I'm still an artist. I don't think in the same way anymore. But I'm going to do a sequel as if I was making it now, with all the things I like now. But it still is, it's still obviously the work of the same man.
But he doesn't do the whole series, does he?
Yeah, every single...
Oh, he does.
The original, season two is like a mess, because at some point it all goes wrong. But
that's the latest one. That's the one that was made recently.
No, the latest one is all him, 18 hours.
Oh, right, I thought that he left the series.
In the middle of the second... There's two series of the original.
Right.
Second series... You want to know who killed Laura Palmer. Everything's amazing up to who killed Laura Palmer. Then after they've told you who killed Laura Palmer, it's a fucking disaster for about 12 episodes.
I wouldn't even say watch them.
And then come in for the last finale where David Lynch came back and you're in for a treat.
Okay. Just to think it back, the thing about Ghostbusters 2 is that they were trying to give you the same film again.
Yes.
And they weren't able to do that. And they would have been better off just continuing the original storyline from Ghostbusters 1.
That's fan club.
That is fan club.
What's your favourite film, Brett? Is that what we're going to go on to?
Is it?
Yeah. What should we do? Oh, okay.
What are you going to do?
I was going to say, is it worth having a song at this point?
Well, I normally put the song on about 20 minutes to, okay. And then we come back and then we play the game. And then, so I think we've got another 10 minutes before we're going to play
Lovely
the song.
Stuff.
Just letting you in behind the magician's curtain there.
Favourite film, can I have three?
You can do whatever you like, really. It's a springboard for a chat, basically.
Don't Look Now.
Love it.
Don't Look Now, yeah. Right, Don't Look Now, but what's your favourite film?
Don't Look Now, Singing in the Rain, Muppets Christmas Carol.
Sure, okay.
That would be my three.
Okay.
Can I have them?
Should we play a song? Play a song. Yeah, okay. I think Muppets Christmas Carol is one of my two favourite Christmas films, and very much like watching Ghostbusters again. Which, like, my other favourite Christmas film is National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
Oh, yeah.
Lovely.
But that just doesn't get better with age.
Funnily, no, that's a film, that's interestingly the film that I saw with my dad, the first film we both saw that we both loved it. Do you know what I mean? It was that weird thing where the crossover of him taking me to the cinema and hating every film, the minute that came out was the first sort of the eclipse of films we both enjoyed.
When you came out of the cinema, did you go, that was better than My Left Foot?
Yeah.
I watched that every Christmas, and the last few it hasn't really done it for me. So it's a little bit of a sad moment. But Muppet's Christmas Carol is amazing, right? It's really... It's really beautiful.
Properly good.
It's really sad.
Really sad.
Scary.
So scary.
It's got a Muppet. It's got Muppets in it, but it's fucking terrifying. And then it's really funny, and the songs are amazing.
And I've said this before, and I stand by it. Michael Caine, That's his best performance. And I'm not being ironic. I think he's fucking brilliant in it. And he's the most, like, committed performance he's ever given. And when he cries at the end of the screen, and he's in a Muppet film, but he ain't, like, being silly. He ain't. He's playing it. I think he's genuinely, it's a really beautiful.
Yeah.
Should have got the Oscar for that, not Cider House Rules.
Yeah.
Come on, mate.
Or Hannah and Her Sisters.
Or Hannah. Well, he's good now.
That's Fan Club.
I'm a big Chaucer Revenge fan.
Did you see Muppet's Christmas Carol on release? Is it something?
Yes. I saw it on release, and every single year since they've done it, I go to Prince Charles and go to the sing along.
Because there's a song that's been cut, isn't there?
Yeah.
Didn't it get cut for TV and then they started just actually using it? It's this sad song, Scrooge.
And Love Is Gone.
Yeah. And they don't have that in the film anymore. It's not on any of the DVD or Blu-ray.
No, it was
releases.
On the VHS.
Was it on the VHS?
Yeah.
And it's not, yeah. It's weird,
sad.
Isn't it, that they've just sort of like taken it out? It's a good song.
Great song.
And then, yeah.
I think it's so sad.
Because there's a callback to it, again, at the end, isn't there? There's a medley, and he kind of like starts singing the same tune. And you go, I recognise that song, but it's not being in the film. I saw it last Christmas, just gone, at a sing-along thing.
Yeah.
It was great. We were watching the Muppets, and there was a room full of hipsters that were all doing shots of tequila, and people were being sick. I love the Muppets. Good.
Good family entertainment.
When people get it wrong, innit?
Yeah,
you've ruined it.
Don't bring tequila to the Muppets.
No.
And Singing in the Rain is a great film as well.
Yeah.
Which is one of the films that is a film about films.
Yeah.
It's a film about the
end of the
talkies,
era,
the end of silent era, and the talkie films coming in, and it's got Gene Kelly directed it.
No, co-directed it with Stanley Donen, I believe.
Yeah.
Very funny film. Holds up as funny.
And Gene Kelly gorgeous.
Is, God, I'd love to.
He's a very manly man, isn't he?
If you could dig someone up and fuck him.
Gene Kelly.
Gene Kelly and Cary Grant, right?
Not Cary, he's not my type. If I could dig up Gene Kelly, I'd say, could we do a dance?
I've got the shovel in my boot.
In this scenario, is he still dead when you dig him up, or does he come out?
Does he come to life?
Is he like?
Does he come to life, or is he?
Is he like Sandra Bullock at the end of The Vanishing? Spoiler alert! Or is he like the woman in the original?
Is he a rotten corpse, or is he?
Exactly,
he's rotten.
Oh, okay.
Oh, he's rotten.
So I'm just fucking a skeleton. He's been dead quite a long time.
Yeah, you're fucking.
That's Fan Club.
You're fucking a skeleton.
Okay, yeah. Whose skeleton do I want to fuck? Yeah, Gene Kelly, I suppose.
Gene Kelly, brilliant. You heard it here first, guys. Brett Goldstein will fuck skeletons.
And that's your new Edinburgh show, isn't it?
Yeah, it's Pleasant Show. Pleasant. 7 o'clock, Pleasant's beneath. Beneath is appropriate.
Brett doesn't just have skeletons in his closet, he's got skeletons in his sex dungeon. So what about Singing in the Rain do you really like?
If I
hadn't seen it before, why would you recommend it to me?
Because I'd say, because there's something like, because it's joyful.
Yeah.
It's like pure joyful. And also, I guess because it's like old and it sounds, and it's a classic and it sounds, if you hadn't seen it, you'd be like, oh, this is probably going to be work, isn't it? Mm. It's probably going to be like, an art film. It's really fun and joy. It's like pure joy for an hour and however long it is.
Old films do put people off.
Yeah.
And I don't really think of them as old. I just think of them as, you know, classic films. But the first time I saw Casablanca, you obviously live in a world, especially in the 80s when there were so many people that were influenced by Casablanca. And Casablanca was like a part of, you know, pop culture.
Culture.
It was in the lexicon. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everyone had a reference to Casablanca. And you go and you feel like you've seen it before you've seen it. You go, oh, no. And I watched Casablanca maybe 7 years ago, something like that, and for the first time. And, yeah, that's amazing.
It
zips along. It's got amazing performances. It's got, like, you know, performances that you don't get anymore.
Mm.
But, Humphrey Bogart's amazing in that.
I'd fuck him as well.
Oh, definitely.
That's Fan Club.
And what was your third favourite film?
Oh, we've done them. That was it. Oh, Don't Look Now.
Don't Look Now.
Right, yeah. Why do you...
Don't Look Now is one of them films... I always loved it, and then the more I watched it sort of again, and then I showed it to someone, I was like, fuck, this is such a good... Like, the more I watched it, I'm like, God, this is a good film.
Do you find it scary?
Yes, but it's more... You know, why I love Don't Look Now mostly is it's my... I think it's the best film about a marriage that I've ever seen that is like a positive portrayal. Like in films, you either have like romantic comedies where they get together at the end, or you have like most long-term couples in films don't like each other, or do you know what I mean? Or they're side characters. And in Don't Look Now, you have a married couple who are going through stuff and they seem so real. It's some of the best performance ever. And they seem like they love each other. And it's such a nice portrayal of a marriage. And there's this sex scene, which is famous. And I don't think I understood it when I was younger, when I first saw it. I just thought, oh, yeah, that's a naughty sex scene. But actually, without being like soft about it, it's very loving. It's two people. It means something.
It's not just about a penis being inserted into a vagina.
It's a skeleton.
It's about a penis being inserted into fixing a relationship.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
It's the first time they've had sex since their daughter died, and it's a scene that you can cry and wank to. And that is unusual.
What's your favourite line in the film?
In Don't Look Now.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what it is. It's, she told you.
Oh, right.
She told you.
My favourite line is when he comes out of the toilet and he turns to his wife and says, I'd give it 5 minutes before you go in there. very romantic.
Is that where the title comes from?
Don't look now. I've done a big one.
Don't go in the toilet. So I'm going to play... We're going to play a song. What's your favourite song, mate?
Oh, my favourite song... It's not that. That is not it. It's a Billy Joel song.
Oh.
Billy Joel Vienna, not Ultravox Vienna. But I like Ultravox Vienna. You can play it.
Well, I mean, you
probably make the top 500.
It's not a cover. It's a totally different song.
Completely different song.
So I don't know why you weren't more specific, Brett, when you said
Billy Joel
Vienna.
I said Billy Joel. Billy Joel was my favourite, and then I said Vienna. Okay,
do you like songs that are called Vienna, though?
Yeah,
that's the title.
I do like that song. You can play Ultravox.
No, I really don't like this song.
Oh, right.
I hate this. I hate Vienna, so I guess we'll just play one of mine. No. That's not my favourite song, by the way, guys. Why does this say, what is going wrong with the fucking thing today? I know what it is. Yeah! Something to go right through your head, yeah. I got a line on you, babe. Yeah, I got a line on you. Come on. Now put your arms around me.
Nick and Nat's Fan Club on Foo Bar Radio.
I'm having real problems with the buttons today. Hello, my name is Nick.
And my name is Nathaniel Metcalf.
We're joined in the studio today. You either listen to the hour or you don't fucking bother. This is Brett Goldstein. Who's your favourite? What were you just talking about during the song there?
I don't know.
We're talking about...
Your favourite film.
Who else you'd dig up? And we're talking about Billy Joel.
Yeah, there's a man who's still currently alive, so I suppose I've got to wait a few years before I'm fancying him. I love Billy Joel. I love him. Mm. I'm not ashamed of it. I think he is...
Why do people say Billy Joel?
I don't know. I don't know how you pronounce it. I love him so much I don't know how to say his name.
I think it's Billy
What
Joel.
Do you like about him? I'm not sure about Billy Joel.
I think he's like Shakespeare. I think he's lived and loved, and I think he can express that. And he's very funny, and if you see him live, which I have fucking loads, he's very funny. He used to do stand-up when he was in the beginning, and he's quite like... I suppose he's quite like he's a sort of manly type, but he's very vulnerable.
Well, that's because I know a couple of years ago he did like a tour with Elton John, didn't he? Mm. And to me, they seem like birds of a feather. They seem like very similar sort of singer songwriters. But I remember at the time people were like, "What? These two? They're like chalk and cheese." And I was going, "No, they're not. They're basically doing the same thing." Yeah, they're basically the same. I think
there's a Twisted Sister song called "Be Cruel to Your School," and it's Twisted Sister, and they spell school,
S-K-O-O-L
or something, or there may be the S-C-U-E-L, like cruel.
Yeah.
And that has got Alex Cooper doing backing vocals on that. And then halfway through, Billy Joel comes in and he starts playing this piano solo. And it's kind of like, wow.
Sweet.
Just imagine it without Twisted Sister. I went to see Billy Joel in Madison Square.
And how was it?
It's good. He is good. I do like him.
I also think he's someone that I grew up with, and there's a lot of like people that you know you listen to when you were younger, or your mum and dad would listen to, and I think he was one of them. And there are people that I've grown out when I sort of grew up. I was like, "Ooh, that's not great," but Billy Joel, I'm like, "Nah, that's great."
But that's it. I know him from like Uptown Girl and things like that. And I think like, is that? Well, I don't like this.
In the River of Dreams, is that what it's called?
River of Dreams.
That maybe was. If I think back to when I was little, that might have been my favourite song of all time when I was seven. You know. Like, and whenever I hear it, I did a show called Dare to Dream, and I used that as my sort of like audience music, and it was on like repeat loads.
Do I know this song?
In the middle of the night.
Oh, yeah.
I can walk through my dreams.
Uptown Girl is like, you know, Bare Naked Ladies. It's like if you've only heard 1 week,
right?
You think that's Bare Naked Ladies. But in fact, Bare Naked Ladies are fucking excellent. But they did sort of one sort of stupidly like fun pop song, and unfortunately that was their biggest hit, and everyone goes, "That's..." It's a bit like that with Uptown Girl. Like, so nothing he's done is like Uptown Girl.
If you were to recommend
Warren and the song Cherry Pie from Uncle Tom's Cabin, they just added that at the last minute, and it's their only hit.
If you were to recommend a Billy Joel song for someone who doesn't really,
I'd go
Billy Joel.
I'd go Scenes from an Italian Restaurant.
What's the Saigon?
It's fucking epic. It's like 8 minutes, and it's sort of four interlocked stories.
Okay.
And that gives you like an album in one song.
The Piano Man as well.
Piano Man's a song.
And what's the Saigon one called?
Good Night Saigon.
I mean fucking hell. That would destroy you.
Okay.
That's like, I can handle this. You can't.
Mm. So fucking, more than Kez. Would it destroy me more than Kez?
I think you just enjoy Kez, don't you? Yeah. You're not moved by it. You're like, I don't know.
I'm not a psychopath.
You don't think it's funny?
Think it's funny, yeah.
If you press play to Good Morning Saigon and press play on Kez at the same time, just when it starts, it syncs up.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Billy Joel, I like him.
Good.
He can go into...
Thank you.
There's no real concept.
He can join the
show.
Clubhouse.
Hey, if you like...
There's something there.
Who's your favourite actor, Brett, while we've got...
My favourite actor?
Yeah.
My favourite movie star is Denzel Washington, even though I'm almost convinced he's not a nice man.
I think, yeah. Well,
same, but then who is?
Same conflicts, but I know that if I put on a Denzel Washington film, it'll be a solid 2 hours.
Yeah.
I'm surprised. It's weird. I've got, like, favourite films that I've only seen, like, one or two times. I've seen Flight, which isn't a great film.
Not a great
film. I've seen that about 6 times. That's too many times to have seen Flight. Mm. And that's kind of like a go-to film where you go, yeah, but it's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's a pretty good, and he's great in it. I do like Denzel Washington.
He is
as an actor.
Yeah, he brings it. Whatever it is, he's got it. Charisma. I don't know what the word is. Star quality. I just watch him and go like, oh, I can't wait till you're dead.
Oh, lovely stuff. Cool.
I wonder if he's more of an actor than a movie star, though, for me. I wonder if he's like...
No.
I think of him like...
A movie star.
He's a movie star.
Okay.
Because he comes in and he's like, even if you think shit, he's going to bring some charisma, he's going to bring some...
And also, he's got one of the best actor-director partnerships with Tony Scott, hasn't he?
Oh,
he made loads of great
Tony
Scott films.
Yes.
And then also, you know, I went to see Unstoppable at the cinema.
Yeah,
it's just
too.
Like, and you don't need to see that film at the cinema.
You don't need to see it anywhere, but it's got Denzel Washington in it. Go on, what's your actor theory?
No, I was just saying, I think he's a good actor, but I don't know if I have that thing with him. Like, I don't see him as that charismatic. I don't have that with him. I think when I see him in stuff, I go, oh, he's good in this, but I don't have that thing like...
But I'm not drawn to him.
Yeah.
That's fine.
It's
That's
okay.
allowed.
Yeah.
But you're wrong.
That's fact, love.
I think that's interesting. I never think of that in that way.
I think he's.
We'll take The Equalizer, which we've talked
which
about before.
Which is fucking
which
terrible.
Which is an awful, awful film. And I do have a theory about The Equalizer that nothing he does is equal to the original crime by a long way. And I think he might be the bad guy in it. Mm. Like someone.
He's such a good actor that I thought that was Edward Woodward. He's incredible.
The thing about The Equalizer is, because Denzel Washington's in it, it takes you to about halfway through the film to realise it's shit.
Yeah,
because you just think, it's Denzel Washington, it must be good.
There's a bit where he sees someone pickpocket a wallet and he picks up a hammer and follows the person. I'm like, that's not equal.
Take his wallet.
Tie his shoelaces together.
Yeah. Don't smash his head in with a hammer. That's not the same.
Okay, now we're even.
Yeah.
Even Stevens.
Now we're equal, guys. Should we play the game?
Yes.
Right, we've got a game. Now it's time to play the world famous Nathaniel Metcalfe game, Better or Worse.
Better or Worse, Brett, is the game in which you have to guess which of these people or places or things are better or worse than the one following.
Okay.
It's based entirely on my own opinions.
Love it.
So, is Sophie Ellis-Bextor better or worse than Beyoncé?
Worse.
That's fan club. Worse. She is worse than Beyoncé. Is Beyoncé better or worse than Danny Glover?
Worse.
Beyoncé's worse.
I think Beyoncé's probably better than Danny Glover.
Oh, what?
So I'm going to say...
Oh, I'm getting too old for this shit.
Is Danny Glover better or worse than the killer dwarf from the end of Don't Look Now? That's fan club!
That's fan club!
God, worse?
No, killer dwarf is better.
Yeah, Danny Glover is worse.
Killer dwarf from fan club. From fan club, fan club, and Don't Look Now.
Now I'm mostly known for fan club.
Better or worse than the Muppets?
Worse.
Yeah, worse than the Muppets. Yeah. Muppets are great. High card. Yeah. It's a high card.
Did you know about this before you came in?
Nah.
Really?
That's so weird. You got Muppets and Don't Look Now. I'm allowed to talk.
Den's a better show up.
Are the Muppets better or worse than Norman Wisdom?
Muppets are better than Norman Wisdom.
They are. Is Norman Wisdom better or worse than Cary Grant?
Not to Nick.
Would you Norman Wisdom's cops?
No, I wouldn't.
Right.
Okay, then worse than Cary Grant.
Not even with yours, mate!
Worse than Cary Grant.
He is worse than Cary Grant.
Yeah.
Is Cary Grant better or worse than Planet of the Apes?
That's Roddy McDowall.
But it is, yeah.
Roddy
specifically
McDowell,
Roddy McDowall.
Yeah, right then, all right then, we'll have that. Roddy McDowall is Cornelius in Planet of the Apes.
Is better than Cary Grant.
Is he better or worse than Cary Grant?
Better?
Better!
Fuck off, mate.
Is Roddy McDowall as Cornelius from Planet of the Apes better or worse than Vincent Price?
In anything.
He's better. Roddy McDowall is better.
He's
than
worse.
I think he's worse than Vincent Price.
Yeah.
Last one. Is Vincent Price better or worse than Peter Cushing?
Oh, the lally.
Better. He's better.
Vincent Price is better.
No, he's worse.
Oh. No, that's not true.
It is true. It's entirely based on my own opinion, Nick. It doesn't count.
It's not true. Well, that game was a sack of shit this week. Very controversial. I didn't expect it to be this controversial, Nat.
Did I win? What happened?
Just when you think that,
I think it's better than last week's.
Because basically what happens is, I'm meant to be taking score while you're playing.
No, do you know what? I have been doing this.
And I haven't done it this week.
It's fine, because, I don't know what you scored, Brett, but I think you've done very well. Currently, Jack Barry got four. Hayley Campbell got seven. Ooh. And I'm doing it out of 10 cards now to keep it even. Okay. And we'll find out next week what your score was.
Oh, you're okay, great.
That's like a good reason to tune in.
Okay, yeah.
Really good.
It's exactly like Top Gear, you're right.
Yeah, it's lovely. Oh, well, we've come to almost the end of another. Should I tell you my story?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'll tell you my story. So I've got a friend who's a teacher. And the other week, she was in a pub and she saw Jim Broadbent. And she was like, oh, Jim Broadbent, because he was in one of the Harry Potters, wasn't he?
I believe so, yeah.
And she went over to Jim Broadbent and she was just like, oh, it's so nice to meet you. I'm a teacher at school. All the kids love you. Do you think I could take a photo with you? And I can show them. And he said, no, that's fine. So she took a photo with him. And then she showed her mate, I had my photo with Jim Broadbent. And they said, no, that's not Jim Broadbent. That's convicted sex offender Jonathan King. Jonathan King!
My kids love you.
She was just like, oh no, I mentioned the kids.
He was so up for it.
Absolutely incredible, isn't it? It's like the worst person. It's the worst person. The worst scenario to do that with. Oh, well. Oh, the kids love you.
Oh,
must have absolutely made his day.
Everyone's got it at the moon.
So we're going to finish now. Brett, what time's your show on in Edinburgh?
Oh, it's 7 p.m. at the Pleasance Courtyard. It's called Brett Goldstein, What Is Love, Baby Don't Hurt Me.
Wicked. Right, well, I'm not going to be there, but...
I'll be there every day.
Every day?
Every day.
Okay, good.
That's fair club. I'm going to play out with...
Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed
Billy Joel song.
Is it?
Yeah.
Which one, Vienna?
No.
Caesar and Town? What?
Oh...
Vienna?
Yeah. It's Uptown Girl by Westlife.
Is that what you wanted?
Slow down, you crazy child. You're so ambitious for a juvenile. But then if you're so smart, tell me, why are you still so afraid? Where's the fire? What's the hurry about? You better cool it off before you burn it out. You got so much to do and only so many hours in a day. Hey, but you know that when the truth is told, that you can get what you want or you can just get old. You're gonna kick off before you even get halfway through. Ooh, when will you realize Vienna waits for you? Slow down, you're doing fine. You can't be everything you wanna be before your time. Although it's so romantic on the borderline tonight, tonight. Too bad, but it's the life you lead. You're so ahead of yourself that you forgot what you need. Though you could see when you're wrong, you know you can't always see when you're right. You're right. You got your passion, you got your pride, but don't you know that only fools are satisfied? Dream on, but don't imagine they'll all come true. When will you realize Vienna waits for you? Take the phone off the hook and disappear for a while. It's alright, you can't afford to lose a day or two. Oh, when will you realize Vienna waits for you? And you know that when the truth is told, that you can get what you want, or you can just get old. You're gonna kick off before you even get halfway through. Ooh, why don't you realize Vienna waits for you? When will you realize Vienna waits for you?